Okay, guys, I think we should start up. Let me welcome you to this seminar on behalf of LSE Ideas and its Latin American program. There's really no reason why I should be in the chair today. My claim to fame with regard to Latin America is mostly that I have just come back from there and enjoyed myself immensely in almost 2 weeks in Latin America. And I learned a lot. It was an absolutely fascinating visit and something I'm watching. I should introduce myself first. I'm Arne Westad. I'm one of the directors of LSE Ideas. The only who's really been this year here is Tanya, who will be doing quite a bit now, both from her vantage point in International History Department and in LSE Ideas with promoting the Latin America program. We've been extremely fortunate, not just with regard to this program, but many programs that we run within LSE Ideas, that much comes out of academic staff and PhD students working together. I think it's never more been more true than what it is for this particular program. As much of the best stuff that we do, it is run by staff and by PhD students in conjunction. And just mention Victor and Martin as well for the work that they have put in to get this program up and going. And it's a particular pleasure today to introduce Maria Monstrabuchi, who is here. Maria is from the Asian Studies program at the Catholic University of Chile, where I just visited. She has worked on relations between Chile and China, both during the Allende government and during the military regime. This is an issue which has a great interest, not just for those who are interested in Latin American international affairs, but also in a broader sense, because at the time there was a lot of discussion going on, not just in South America, but also in Asia, Europe, and the United States, with regard to China's points of view, with regard to the regime changes in Chile. Of course, the coup in Chile in 1973 came at a point when the Soviet-Chinese confrontation really was at its peak. And it was very difficult for China to take the same position as the Soviet Union with regard to South America and put a lot of pressure, I think, on the Chinese leaders to define their own policy with regard to Chile, both during Allende and after. This is what Maria has been looking into, so we're very much looking forward to hearing your presentation today, and then we'll have a discussion session afterwards. Please, Maria. Yeah.
First of all, I'm sorry, but I'm going to read. I'm not very confident in English, so I'm sorry for that. But first of all, I would like to thank the Latin American program at LSE Ideas, which allows me to be here today, in particular Professor Arne Westad and Tanya Harmer. You may have seen that my paper is entitled Continuity in an Era of Upheaval, Sino-Chilean Relations, 1970-1974, but I will go up to 1978. I think it's better. I think you will appreciate it. Obviously, the history of the relationship between China and Chile is of growing interest to people in Chile and beyond that, Latin America also, and then, I guess, the whole world. Relations today are closer than they have ever been, can be seen through the import of Chinese products and Chilean exports, such as copper sold to MinMetals, and also continuous visits of politicians and students between both countries. I began my research because I was interested to know what the history of this relationship was. There's only one book written by a Taiwanese diplomat historian on Chilean-Chinese relations, and it goes up to 1970. And nothing has been written after that, with the exception of some articles, and mostly centered in the 1990s. I was interested in learning about how this relationship had come from and how had it evolved, especially considering recent Chilean history. For this, I have done research at the Foreign Ministry Archives in Chile and have held some interviews and email communication with the protagonists of the story. I have also used this trip to London to visit the National Archives at Kew, which I really liked, and where I have found some revealing material as well. My research to date is far from being complete, but I do hope it sheds some light in a history that has been mostly unknown until now. Communist Chinese involvement in Chile began officially in 1970, although, as we shall see, ties began before this. It was in December of 1970 in Paris that Chile formally opened diplomatic relations with the People's Republic of China, just over two decades after the triumph of the Chinese Revolution. This had been a historical demand of the Chilean left, and with the Unidad Popular government in power since the month before, Chile was now joining the rest of the world in a dynamic movement of recognition of communist China. What is interesting, and what surprised the Chilean left in particular, is that in 1973, after the Chilean coup, diplomatic relations between Chile and the PRC continued. What I intend to show you here today is how the relations of Chile with China have to be studied in a Soviet Union-US-China triangle context. We can't study it only in relation to the Soviet-US relationship or Sino-Soviet relations, but in this triangle. This, because Chilean foreign policy of the period is determined by what is happening in the international sphere and tries to play its cards within the system. Nevertheless, I do not mean that Chile took decisions on foreign policy completely aware of this situation, but rather that the results of its negotiations and requests were directly influenced by this environment. So, what accounts for both the establishment of relations and then the continuation of the PRC's relationship with Chile after the coup on September 11, 1973? During the 1950s and 60s, PRC-Chilean relations were completely out of the official diplomatic sphere, and the Republic of China was the official China in Chile. Relations between Communist China and Chile were restricted to informal exchange carried out by institutes of cooperation, whose members included Salvador Allende and Pablo Neruda, visits and exchanges, distribution of printed materials, some trade, media information, and few links developed with communists and the Communist Party in Chile. At a regional level, in the 1960s, after the Cuban Revolution, the Chinese started paying significant attention to Latin America. In 1959, a member of the British consulate in Shanghai wrote, "I have been very much struck since I have been in China by the active interest the Chinese have taken in the internal affairs of Latin America, much more than I ever suspected when I was there. There have been many indications in recent months of an effort of the Chinese communists to exert influence in Latin America, perhaps to the extent of displacing the Soviet Union as a source of inspiration for the local communist parties." This does not mean that it was a special interest, but interest did exist, and the British certainly noticed it. In the short term, China reinforced an anti-US movement in Latin America in the 1950s, and later gained ground vis-à-vis the USSR in the 1960s. By establishing a constant presence, the PRC improved the Chinese image in Latin America, gaining international support. China's presence in Latin America kept up an opposition against both the U.S. and the Soviet Union, and its continuance during this period helped sustain its claim of being the legitimate China, opposing Taiwan. The PRC's cultural diplomacy in Latin America was marked by this Asian nation sorting its way through an area traditionally under the influence of the U.S., and with which it therefore had no formal diplomatic contact. Nevertheless, it reached a wide range of people. Towards the end of the period of the 1960s, it was able to reinforce its image in opposition to the Soviet Union and campaign actively to be accepted in the UN. Then, the international isolation produced by the Cultural Revolution and the Sino-Soviet conflict was overcome in the 1970s with the PRC's acceptance in the UN, thereby acquiring international recognition and status. However, the establishment of diplomatic relations cannot be claimed as an achievement of cultural diplomacy alone during this period. Rather, the impact of the PRC's presence in Latin America appears to have been marginal in this respect. The opening of diplomatic relations in the 1970s responded far more to the political situation of rapprochement between the US and China, even in the case of the Unidad Popular. Indeed, the opening of relations between Chile and China can be read as a product of two things. On the one hand, an opening towards the international arena by the PRC, which can be observed by its proximity, or tendency towards proximity, to the United States at this moment of the 70s. And on the other hand, the election of a leftist coalition government in Chile, to whom it only seemed natural to open relations with communist China, even though the Communist Party was profoundly Soviet-oriented. The Pinochet coup in 1973, therefore, appeared as an instance where relations would be broken, or at least placed on hold. But surprisingly, the PRC did not cut off relations, and neither did General Pinochet. The possible explanations for this situation could be the economic and diplomatic potential that Pinochet saw in the relations with the PRC. However, a more plausible explanation is that the Chinese did not intend to cut off relations with Chile, as the fall of Allende proved that a Soviet-oriented political model was not a successful one, and that the Chinese model was the one to be followed. The coup and Beijing's reaction to it acted as a statement that showed that the PRC did not support a Soviet-aligned government. Overall, the opening of a dialogue between the PRC and the US had allowed Latin American countries to look at the PRC as a possible economic party, and it meant that diplomatic relations could be established. And after 1973, Chile was again part of the United States' area of influence. For today, what I thought I would do is give you a brief historical overview of the history of Chile's ties with China, before then moving on to talk about the opening of Chilean-Chinese relations, relations during the Unidad Popular, and the continuance of relations after the coup. In particular, I am interested in addressing the following questions. What did the relationship between Chile and China consist at different moments of that relationship? How important was it to both countries, and what did it signify? And how the Chilean military dictatorship reconciled its vehement anti-communism with its ongoing relationship with the PRC. So I'll go back in time a bit. Relations between China and Latin America were slow to get off the ground. At the first moment, ties were centered on Chinese migration to Latin America as workers. And this made the Chinese court interested on establishing diplomatic relations as a way to secure Chinese people's rights in Latin America. Since the Industrial Revolution, regular commercial traffic was established between both regions. Slow, I mean very little, but it was established. This continues until today. However, on the whole, Latin America continued to look towards Europe for whatever kind of commerce, only replayed afterwards by the US, with Asia appearing like a promising market lately, only lately. In the early years of the PRC, the newly established Chinese government apparently followed the same line as the Soviet Union in its global strategy. In this respect, Chile for the moment was part of the other camp. In 1948, President González Videla enforced his Ley de Defensa Permanente de la Democracia, banning communists from political life, thereby winking at the US, despite having earlier been elected with the support of the communists. In this alignment with the US, he betrayed the communists openly and underlined that Chile's position within the Cold War would be on the US's side. Until now, Chile and most Latin American countries had diplomatic relations with nationalist China. With an eye on the Soviet Union, the PRC looked at Latin America and, as I have said, applied a cultural diplomacy policy. Then, a decade before Chile, Cuba opened diplomatic relations with the PRC in 1960. Indeed, Castro's revolution became China's first step into an official political relationship with Latin America. During the late 1960s, the Chilean scene was going through radical changes, the Revolución en Libertad, Revolution in Freedom, of Chile's Christian Democrat President Eduardo Frei, started agrarian reform, and as a result of a general movement that radicalized Chilean politics, Allende was able to win a narrow victory in 1970 and assume the presidency. This is, in an overall look, very overall look. What was happening with the nationalists, meanwhile? The diplomatic offensive of the PRC worried the Taipei representatives, especially during the last years of the 1960s. They doubled their attacks against Mao and other PRC leaders. Facing the possibility of Salvador Allende as president of Chile, the embassy of nationalist China warned the government of the consequences of bilateral relations. The ambassador carried out an active campaign trying to secure relations amongst left-wing parties in case the left coalition's candidate won. Once Allende reached power, he did not break relations off with nationalist China, but opened them first with the PRC, forcing nationalist China itself to break with Chile. The first years of the 1970s found the PRC with a more flexible foreign policy. The opening of relations with Chile occurred in Paris, and Eduardo Frei's ambassador, the president before, Enrique Bernstein, prepared the agreement. He was a Christian Democrat, he was a good friend of Allende, and later continued being director of the Foreign Affairs Office on a personal request of Allende, and he then continued working for the military. He asked for the coup. In his memories, he says that he wanted the coup. The agreement went through quickly, most probably, as Bernstein believes, because the new Chilean ambassador in Paris would be Pablo Neruda, close to the Soviet Union, and Beijing therefore wanted to avoid an agreement directly negotiated with him. On December 15, 1970, a joint declaration stated the establishment of diplomatic relations between Chile and the PRC. It was made public on January 5, 1971, in Chile, and justified for the ideological reason that China was unfairly segregated from the international sphere, and for the pragmatic reason that the country with most population in the world would help construct an international plan of peace and social security. In January, the representative of the PRC arrived in Santiago, and in February, the Chilean representative arrived in Beijing. The Chilean ambassador in the PRC, who arrived in July that year, was Armando Uribe, a poet who has since received the National Literature Prize in 2004. I argue that the opening of relations between Chile and the PRC responded more to a global tendency towards opening relations with the PRC than to an ideological process, as it is a moment when more countries are opening relations with the PRC, although this is something to discuss later on. Meanwhile, relations between Allende and the US were getting worse. The presence of hundreds of Cubans in Chile did not help. Within the situation, how did this new relationship between Chile and China develop? At the end of 1971, an economic mission from the government visited the PRC and received a loan for Chile without conditions or interest. However, in November of 1973, about 70% of the loan had not been used, and most of the projects had been discarded for different reasons. Both the Chinese representatives in Chile and the Chilean representatives in the PRC insisted that quantities of the products exchanged were too low and that political relations had to be strengthened first. In fact, political relations were not at all that strong or certain yet. When Allende visited the Soviet Union in 1972 and not China, this was not well received in Beijing. Then, in January 1973, when Zhou Enlai met with the Chilean Foreign Affairs Minister, Clodomiro Almeida, he was very reserved and critical about Chile's revolutionary process. He mentioned how fast the whole socialist process had gone and the risks this brought. He clearly stated, "I think that in some things you have gone too fast." Zhou also criticized Chile for having replaced its dependency on the US to its dependency on the Soviet Union. When informed on the 9% interest on Soviet loans, he said, "Merchants of Venice, how dare they call themselves socialists?" Through Almeida, Joe sent a letter to Allende regretting the economic trouble and suggesting that Chile should focus more on its national production force. Throughout the letter, there are implicit and explicit criticisms of the Unidad Popular. There is, of course, more to learn about this meeting and China's view, and with any luck, I will learn more about it in the near future. I want to get a copy of this letter. That's what I'm working on. But it is safe to say that at the end of the Unidad Popular, relations with the Chinese government were not all that good. In the interview with Almeida in 1973, Zhou asked him if the UP, the Unidad Popular, were concerned about an intervention of the military. Almeida said the military were on their side. The Chinese insisted that the Chileans should go more slowly. And Uribe, the ambassador, criticized the Chilean government for not being more proactive in the commercial exchange with China, considering that China had much to offer. After the coup in Chile on September 11, the Chinese government did not break relations with the military government. It followed the same line of non-intervention in internal affairs that had been set out in the agreement of 1970. But in the embassy in Beijing, the Chilean embassy in Beijing, the situation grew quite complicated. Ambassador Uribe was in Europe at the moment of the coup, and everything was very, it was a bit of a mess what was going on in the embassy. When he arrived back in Beijing, Uribe acted as a representative of a Chilean government in exile, although it is not very clear what he meant by that, or whether he had coordinated with any other political factions in Chile in particular. The embassy, meanwhile, continued working simultaneously, sending messages to the new military regime through personal cables, as telegrams were sent too close to the residence used by Armando Uribe. So, simultaneously, messages were sent to the representatives of the military and to the exiled from within meters from each other. A month after Allende's death, Uribe sent out invitations to all diplomats in Beijing to sign a condolences book. But the day before, the PRC invited the Chilean delegation, loyal to the military, to the reception to be held because of the visit of the Canadian Prime Minister. They were backing the military. Uribe asked for an interview with the protocol department to discuss the matter and was received on October 10, 1973, the day before the ceremony. He was informed that he was no longer recognized as the diplomatic representative of Chile. During the next day, the other members of the embassy, loyal to the Unidad Popular, had to explain to visitors that the ceremony had been suspended. If the Chinese thought Allende's government was weak and about to fail, they could have had a contingency plan of what to do if it fell, but I do not know if this plan existed. Nevertheless, it does not seem to be the case, as their behavior is quite erratic after the coup. Letter of condolences to Allende's widow and an official recognition of the military's government through the invitation to the reception of Canada's premier a month after the coup. The approval of Alberto Joachim as Chile's economic attaché to China in October 1973 was the recognition, the official recognition of the Chilean regime. In spite of the military coup, diplomatic relations between Chile and the PRC developed in a process of continuity. The junta managed the crisis as in a survival program. And yet, the 11th of September of 1973 is probably the worst political break in Chilean history, with consequences still at work now. Coercion and repression were central to the new regime, leading to rejection of the regime by most of the international community. In many respects, the new members of the Chilean government were uninformed about China. They even sent $2,000 to prepare a propaganda campaign to help towards the image of the country. Up to April 1974, no news had been published in China about Chile, favorable or unfavorable, and it was only in May 1974 that the new ambassador was appointed. Although relations were maintained, they were nevertheless cold. The ratification of treaties established during the Unidad Popular was critical to the development of trade, but the Chileans were not too sure about how to make them work. The Chilean representative, thought the Chinese took too long to do things and that it could even happen that the treaty would lapse while waiting for the visit of technicians, consultants and new commissions. In June 1974, the new Chinese ambassador met with the Chilean representative. The Chinese emphasized that the cost that the PRC was paying in the international arena by maintaining relations with Chile. When the Chinese asked the Chilean representative about the violation of human rights and deaths in Chile, they received the official line. The death had started during the Unidad Popular years, and the deaths of the September 11 were because of skirmishes started by the left. And here I quote from the documentation received in Chile from the embassy about what the Chilean representative told the Chinese. If there had been any deaths after that, they can be called suicides, because whoever attacks the armed forces that take care of national tranquility confirms he is an antisocial element and is exposing himself to the logical consequences of forces of order. The embassy held that only those guilty by act or omission during the Unidad Popular would be judged, not those in favor of the previous government, as Xinhua had stated. Regarding human rights, both Chile and the PRC ignored the subject during this period. The PRC was always absent, a fictitious absence, in the condemning of human rights violations in Chile and the UN. During this period, then, overall relations were good but cold. They were not a priority, but nevertheless showed continuity. trade-wise, the PRC imported iodine, saltpeter, and copper from Chile until today. Chile imported tea, rice, and medical supplies. In August 1975, an economic delegation led by Chilean businessman Ricardo Claro traveled to China looking for ways to strengthen economic relations. Even though it was given positive press coverage, no real results ensued. This shows us that efforts were made. Ricardo Claro had an important role in local economics. But there was no special effort put forward to further develop economic relations. Relations were definitely not without problems. A Taiwanese journalist in Chile was accused of acting as if Chile and nationalist China had normal bilateral relations. Chile would insist on the fact that his residence in Chile was not official. But in the face of international isolation in 1975, the junta reoriented foreign affairs, giving priority to trade in the Asian Pacific area. In 1976, the Chilean military government passed law decrees extending the economic, credit, and technical agreements that had been established by Allende in 1972, a day before they were due to expire. In August 1976, a message was published in Beijing concerning the Tangshan earthquake, signed by the Comité Central del Partido Comunista Revolucionario de Chile, which surprised the Chilean delegation. It was the Maoist group, of the Maoist Communist Party in Chile. The delegation in Chile was not able to find out where the message had come from or what was the Partido Comunista Revolucionario de Chile. I mean, we know, but they did not. And they had no idea, and they were very worried about it. They were scared that they were going to take over the embassy. During all of 1976, the press was indifferent towards Chile, a silence which can be interpreted as approval, or at least not disapproval. When Joe died in 1975, Pinochet sent a letter of condolence. He did the same when Mao died in 1976. Furthermore, when Mao died, official mourning was declared in Chile. Chile was an ally in Latin America for the One China policy. It did not intervene in internal affairs and was an excellent example of Soviet failure. In words of the Chilean delegation, relations were good but cold. In 1976, Chile reappeared in the Chinese press and a positive image of Chile emerged. Better relations with its neighbors and positive economic results were stressed without intervention of foreign technicians. Since the military regime presented communism as something bad and dangerous, the embassy in Beijing proposed to always distinguish between China and the Soviet Union. In this context, what is interesting to observe is how the anti-Marxist position of the military changed to being anti-Soviet. There was no mention of Maoism. Of course, there were limits to the positive approach to relations. There were no official political visits to Chile or invitations extended to Chilean politicians to visit China. As in the very early days of the PRC's relations with Latin America, cultural and economic exchange was the best means of developing diplomacy. 1978 is a moment of change in Sino-Chilean relations. Both Chile and the PRC were looking for pragmatic relations and were trying to find common ground in international forums and on which they could base their bilateral relations. Illustrative of this effort, in October 1978, Hernán Cubillos, which is also the first civilian foreign affairs minister, visited the PRC. And economic exchange became more intense, and also cultural exchanges continued, being carried out by sports and martial arts delegations. News about Chile in the Chinese press increased then in the late 1970s. 8 pieces of news were published in April 1978, more than ever since the junta was in power. All news was good. For example, talking about the success of economic policies and completely ignoring the conflict between Chile and Argentina that was going on at the time. Economic exchange grew during the 80s and then again in the 90s. The center-left Concertación coalition in power since 1990 adopted a pragmatic approach towards China. Today, China looks as one of the most important commercial partners of Chile. China is the second trade partner of Chile, and they are both members of APEC, and in 2005 a free trade agreement was signed. So now I will present my conclusions or the reasons why I speak of the continuity of diplomatic relations. The Cold War did not permit an official diplomatic relationship between Chile and the PRC until 1970, when Salvador Allende was elected president. During Allende's government, Popular Unity, or Unidad Popular, relations can be considered good, but far from enthusiastic. The PRC looked suspiciously at the peaceful road to socialism. This could hardly be a revolution, the Chinese thought. Furthermore, the Soviet model of communism of Allende was not popular with the Chinese due to the Sino-Soviet conflict. Now we know that it wasn't very popular with the Soviets either. Even so, Chile's stronger ties with the Soviet Union and Cuba had real effects in terms of limiting the speed with which political exchange developed during this period. Then, September 11, 1973, marked a radical change in the way Chile carried out its foreign affairs. Isolated and condemned by the international sphere, it developed a mechanism of adaptation to the war scenario. Changes within China, the death of Zhou and Mao and the coming to power of Deng Xiaoping, favored a pragmatic attitude of China towards the international sphere. Even though ideological opposites, pragmatic positions brought them together. What is interesting to note is how the opening of relations can be seen from different points of view. In the first place, fulfilling a long-standing demand of the Chilean left. Salvador Allende had been president of the Instituto Chileno-Chino Cultura, the Chilean Chinese Cultural Institute. So, I mean, he had been in touch with the Chinese in the 1960s, though. I mean, 1950s, early 1960s. Second, as the most normal situation to be expected from a leftist president such as Salvador Allende. Third, as part of an international goal of the PRC to opening up relations with different countries that could mean a vote in the UN. Fourth, as a way for the PRC of entering a space where the Soviet were dominant, although it must be said that the Soviet Union never engaged very deeply with the project of the Unidad Popular. And how can we characterize the persistently ongoing diplomatic relations? The maintenance of diplomatic relations between Chile and China after September 11 can be explained as a natural expression of the effects of the Sino-Soviet conflict. The coup proved that a Soviet-supported government and a peaceful transition to socialism was not viable, and this reinforced the image of China as a forerunner of communism worldwide. So, who was most responsible for this continuity? The Chilean military's seeming contradictory ideological policy was not actually all that contradictory. Maintaining diplomatic relations with a Marxist government was perfectly explainable in their anti-communist crusade for, under their logic, the enemy of my enemy is my friend, and China offered a way to limit the Soviet threat. The PRC also showed continuity in their approach to Chile. The PRC persisted in opening diplomatic relations with Latin American countries so as to gain more presence in the international sphere, and then persisted maintaining them, very pragmatically supporting the Chilean left or the military when thought necessary. This, I think, shows us that the U.S. Sino-Soviet triangle is central to the Chilean-Chinese relations in the 1970s. Indeed, both Chile and China acted within the international sphere conditions. In the period 1970-1973, the relations meant a socialist alliance, and from 1973 to 1978, they were united pragmatically with a strong base supported on the possibilities that trade had for both. Until today, not very many people in Chile know what happened during this period. There is a vague notion that the Chinese were supportive with Pinochet, but the reaction is mostly of surprise when they hear of the continuity of relations from 1970 to 1978 and onwards. But it is a recurrent comment of Chinese diplomats in Chile about how Chile was the second Latin American country, the first Latin American country, the first South American country and the second Latin American country after Cuba, to open relations with Chile, and how those have continued since then. I think this has favored this continuous in a virtuous cycle, but there is little engagement with the history of the relationship during the Unidad Popular and dictatorship periods. As I have tried to show, the opening of bilateral relations in 1970 opened a process that continues until today, but much research is still to be done to understand how these developed and how they have continued until today. Thank you, and I look forward to hearing your comments.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Maria. That's fascinating. And quite a sordid story in many ways. I mean, it shows, I think, first and foremost, the Chinese diplomacy at its most one-eyed approach. And it leaves one wondering a bit about motives in a way on both sides. In a way, no, we one thing with this one, I mean, we have to explore motives both on the side. I think I'm mainly interested, I must admit, here in what happens after the coup in September 73. At least we can start from that angle. But both Chinese and Chilean Pinochet motivations to keep the relationship going. And I'm particularly surprised, perhaps, on the Pinochet regime side, because in spite of the demonstrable anti-Sovietism of the Chinese regime, after all, they were communists, and with the relatively limited knowledge about the outside world that existed within the military headquarters, or at least those who came to support the coup, it is still a little bit surprising that they were willing to continue the relationship, or at least not to break off the relationship. Yeah. So I'm wondering about motivations. I mean, if you look at the period as a whole that you are looking at, how important do you think the political security, as you said at the beginning of your talk, sort of the relationship to the United States as a part of this were? And how important were the economic considerations? Because it seems to me from your story that the economic issues really came in later, but that's not the same thing as saying that there couldn't have been hopes earlier on the side of the military regime that China could actually play a positive economic and financial role with regards to this.
I think the motives are economic, because they had this loan from the Chinese and that they got in 1972, and they could keep them. And I think and they hadn't been used. Only 30% of that loan had been used. So I think it's an economic interest, basically.
It is personal.
Yeah, I think so. I think there's also, I mean, everybody was breaking off relations with Pinochet, so, I mean, if the Chinese were not going to do it, they might as well.
Well, exactly.
I mean,
the point is about reducing the number of your enemies in a certain way.
Yeah, but also because there's an economic part, which is very strong, sure. I think. But it's true that Pinochet was very, very anti. I mean, when he takes over power in Chile, he says, we're going to extirpate Marxist cancer. That's his, famous phrase. So, I mean, the people in Beijing, the Chilean diplomats in Beijing, were very worried that they had to change this kind of saying, this Marxist cancer, because it wasn't helping in relation with.
One should assume
it did not. But I think it's economic reasons, basically. And then there's a story that I can't find proof of it, but people talk about, that apparently the day after the coup, Mao or someone in the Chinese government called Pinochet and offered all kinds of help, whatever was needed, and actually an airplane flew over with, I don't know, some kind of thing. I can't find. I haven't been able to find proof of that. And a teacher.
Who did you hear that from?
From a Taiwanese scholar in Chile. Huh. But he's, I guess, someone that knows more about Chilean-Chinese relations. Not so much. But he says he's doing research on this, but it hasn't come out. And I want to see if it comes out, because if not.